Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, June 27th, 2016. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, and it's great to have you here today. It's also great to have Atlassian as our sponsor this week, and we'll get to them soon. But before we do that, I need your help sorting something out.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's okay because you're my financial advisor, so what could possibly go wrong?
You're in trouble?
Well, you know, it's all a matter of perspective. All right, so I've been watching Apple stock go up and go down, and Apple was the pride of Wall Street, and now their stock isn't doing as well. And is Apple failing? Help me out here with this whole Apple stock thing.
Well, I wrote about, so all right, most what's recently happening just in the last couple of trading days with Apple is the Brexit vote.
Right.
And I see that Nightshade has an opinion on this.
She totally does.
Yeah, kind of funny. So the Brexit vote sent markets tumbling because it's going to make business difficult in Europe for Britain. Mm-hmm. And London is one of the financial centers of the globe. So, I mean, by and large, this is bad for the economy, and traders are reacting accordingly. So Apple sold off, and it has very little to do with Apple, very little even to do with Apple's specific business in Europe or Britain.
Okay.
It's just more about a general global concern amongst investors that things are going to go to hell in the handbasket.
Right. Okay.
So, and, you know, I don't know, my guess, first of all, I own a very, very small position in Apple that is all but irrelevant and in no way affects my opinion of Apple at any time about anything.
I'm assuming that that with the shares you have in Apple, you can't buy an annual, single annual drink at Starbucks every year.
If I sold all my shares in Apple, yeah, I could probably actually take care of a year's worth of coffee needs.
Oh, I was thinking just the dividends you get, being able to buy one cup of coffee a year.
I'm doing a little bit better than that. But
all right,
not
Frappuccino.
Much. Yeah, Frappuccino. Yeah, so you know, rock on. But anyway, all that was just for full disclosure sake. I mean, the sell-off we've seen Friday and today isn't about Apple. It's about the markets. It's about Brexit.
Okay.
But even before that, of course, Apple stock has been languishing. It's well off its high. Let me see what its current high is. I think current high
last
is
time it, I looked.
122?
Yeah, maybe.
132. And back in May, it dipped all the way down to 89.47, and right now it's at 90. As of this, like as we're recording this, it's at $91.98 a share. The Apple stock has not been doing particularly well. So, and then part of that is, of course, because Apple actually saw flat iPhone sales. Flat revenues for the first time, actually year over year revenues that were down for the January quarter, and December quarter revenues that were just barely up, you know, as not showing any real growth. And, you know, people are actually concerned about Apple's future. And most of that is because we don't know what Apple's working on. I mean, we know that Apple's working on a car, but we don't know that Apple's working on a car. I know that Apple's working on a car.
Right, but Apple hasn't officially announced that they're working on a car. Therefore, technically, we don't know Apple's working on a car, even though we do know.
And even if we didn't know that Apple's working on a car, and I do know that Apple's working on a car, we don't really know what its plans are, right? We don't know how many cars Apple expects to sell. Maybe Apple only expects to sell 2,000 cars a year. It's probably not the case. But, I mean, you know, no one knows. You can't configure Apple's you can't model for this yet. You can only have faith that Apple is doing nothing, mm-hmm. or that Apple is doing something.
And they do have a long track record of doing something.
Well, yes, absolutely. Anyone, like all the stuff we saw come out of WWDC, there was a lot of cool stuff that came out of WWDC.
Yeah.
This shows that Apple is doing lots of things. And yeah, we know about the car, but there are other things that we don't know about. We know that Apple has a large team working, doing something with VR, but we don't know what. We know that Apple has other secret projects in the works, too, that we know even less about. But really, when it comes to Apple, you either have faith that Apple is doing nothing, or you have faith that Apple is doing something. And my assumption is that long-term investors, I count myself amongst them, have faith that Apple is doing something. And there are lots of reasons that I think that you should have faith that Apple is doing something. The biggest one, I don't want to go down this particular rabbit hole too far, but the biggest reason is that we haven't seen a brain drain. We haven't seen an executive flight from Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So something is keeping those people there at Apple. And it's not right now. It's certainly not the stock options, because the stock options, the Apple stock isn't doing all that well. So they're working on something. It's all right. So here's where the Wall Street thing kind of comes back into the picture.
Okay.
Wall Street has never gotten Apple. And, you know, and part of this was sparked by a rant from Constable Odo, a longtime member of the Mac Observer, who is an Apple investor. He was an Apple investor. I don't know if he is right now. And I'm pulling up that comment here. And it's my article about Brexit and its effect on Apple's stock on Friday. He posted a bit of a rant about how, you know, the Apple's a joke with Wall Street, and that Apple isn't doing anything. And he's definitely in the faith that Apple is not doing anything camp, or at least that's what it seems like to me. And the argument that Apple is a joke to Wall Street today, which is an argument he makes, sort of requires the belief that Apple was never was that Wall Street ever grokked Apple. And Wall Street has never gotten Apple, not when it was sending Apple stock higher, and not when it sells off Apple stock now. Wall Street doesn't have the ability to wrap its head around what Apple does and why Apple has value. And you know, like all the knee jerk buy recommendations that Apple enjoyed for several years,
mm-hmm.
were no more informed than all of the sell recommendations that Apple enjoyed for years before that.
Okay, so you told me a long time ago, when I was trying to wrap my head around things that were happening with Apple stock, is that the stock market is really an emotional beast. So, and I'm paraphrasing you, of course. So would I be correct in assuming that a lot of what's happening with Apple stock now versus what was happening when everyone was saying buy, 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 has a foundation that is at least in part emotional?
Yeah, I mean, you know, boy, Apple's sort of, I it's interesting you say that I told you that Apple, that the Wall Street's an emotional beast. I don't think that Wall Street is an emotional beast in general. I mean, Wall Street can panic, and I guess panic can be kind of an emotion.
Mm-hmm. We'll go with it.
Yeah, maybe. The bottom line is that Wall Street has never gotten Apple. Wall Street didn't get Apple when Steve Jobs came back. Wall Street didn't get Apple when the iPod was a thing. At Wall Street didn't get Apple when iTunes was a thing, when Apple stores became a thing, when the iPhone came out, when the iPad came out, when the Apple Watch came out. I mean, like Wall Street cannot wrap its head around how Apple does business. And Wall Street can't wrap its head around what to do about the fact that Apple doesn't give a roadmap to the world for what it's planning on doing. And so Wall Street, generally speaking, sort of reacts to the short-term ebbs and flows of Apple's specific finances. So, you know, Apple makes more money than any other company on the planet, yet its PE ratio has never justified that. It's price to earnings ratio. And that's all wrapped up into this thing. Just Apple, the Wall Street doesn't get Apple, but it never has. That hasn't changed. That Apple is being sold off now does not mean that Wall Street can wrap its head around Apple now any more than it did before. But the same thing was true back when Wall Street was sending Apple up. Now, I have argued on several times, several occasions, that a lot of sell-offs in particular were rational on Wall Street's part. And that's kind of a separate argument from this notion of whether or not Wall Street really gets Apple. Because when Wall Street is thinking about Apple, and they're thinking about like next quarter and next year at the best, that's kind of a lot different than actually, again, having faith that Apple is actually working on something that could matter for the future. That's actually a much separate issue. That's more of a nuts and bolts financial kind of thing, as opposed to an overall business model kind of thing. Am I making any sense whatsoever?
Yes, and what you're telling me doesn't really instill much faith in Wall Street's ability to ever understand Apple.
That would be correct. There are very few people on Wall Street who understand Apple. People like, I think David Einhorn would be one of them. He's at it's Monday morning, and it was kind of a long weekend.
Yes, it was.
He's at
at the one place.
Greenlight Capital is where he is. Right. He's someone I think that gets at Apple. There's definitely a couple people do, but by and large, I don't think that Wall Street is ever going to get Apple. And so Apple's stock price is always going to be subject to the, you know, nuts and bolts, near term, you know, ebb and flow of any specific short term business reporting that Apple does.
All right. And the fact that Apple is lower now than it has been for a while, a lot of companies are lower today because, like you mentioned, Brexit. And markets around the world have taken a negative hit because of the vote in the UK.
Yeah. Markets are down, period. And Apple is just down
along with them.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so we could keep going because there's so much more you could teach me about this, but we do have a sponsor, so I need to talk about them because they're pretty cool and I want to talk about them, and that would be Atlassian. And Atlassian is a company that makes Bitbucket and HipChat and Confluence and Jira, and these are all really powerful tools that you can use for project management, for collaborating as a group on software development, and whatever it is that you need to make your group do effectively. They have the tools to make sure that all the administrative stuff gets done. And Bitbucket is one of those apps that a lot of people swear by because it lets you do versioning for the software you're developing. So you can manage all the different segments of code that you have and assign those to whoever needs to work on them and keep track of all the different versions of those segments. And if something goes wrong, it's easy to roll back to an earlier version and figure out where the problems came in. So really handy. And the rest of their products, really great too. And they all work together seamlessly, which is really nice. So what you need to do is go check out their website. That would be atlassian.com, atlassian.com. Check out other products because I'm betting there's something there that you need to make your job easier. Thank you, Atlassian, for being our sponsor. Okay, so Brian, you were showing me a really cool thing, or what seems to me a cool thing, that Google's working on, and it's called Google Blocks.
Yes, I was, and you're not going to tell me that I'm the one who's going to explain this, are you?
No, I kind of put you on the spot.
You did. I took the stock thing, man.
Yeah.
I took the stock thing. Give me a little credit.
Oh, you rocked the stock thing. So, okay, so here's what Blocks is, and I'm going to start by saying, yeah, I do think this is pretty cool. So Blocks is a way of visibly, and I'm going to use the word tangibly, coding. And I say tangibly because what they've done is they've developed a system where you take these little blocks, like literal blocks, and each of the blocks can perform some specific function, a code function in an application. And then you take them and stick them together, and then they can communicate, like through Bluetooth, to another device and operate that device for you.
Baseboards connected to the...
Yes.
Board.
Right. So you have the baseboard, and then you have the other boards with pucks, and when you start sticking all the pieces together, it creates a functioning application. And the example that Google is giving right now, they took a little robot and wrote a program, or actually built a program with Google Blocks that would control the robot. And so then they taped a Sharpie to the robot, and it sat there and moved around on a piece of paper and drew a series of boxes.
Right. All according to the instructions that were physically laid out with these blocks in a sequence that caused that to happen.
Right.
So it gives young kids, and you know, I had it, the next one put it, curious adults, it gives young kids a way to see planning and cause and effect.
Yeah, like, it's really cool.
Some of the foundations and building blocks of not only coding but of life. Kids. My understanding, you know, because I'm some great expert, my understanding is that children are very, very motivated by cause and effect. I did this and then this happened. Mm-hmm. Wow, look at that. Or wow, look at me.
Sure.
And this is one of those things that's tapping right into that. And I really like it.
I like it too. And I like this trend we're seeing with coding tools that are taking kids into account. So Google Blocks, which is not out yet. It's something that Google's working on right now. And then we have Swift Playgrounds on the iPad coming soon.
Yep.
And
which is a different approach altogether.
Right. But the idea is make coding approachable and less intimidating for kids.
Yeah. Make it fun and give them the tools to actually do something. And, you know, it's kind of like, to a certain extent, and maybe this isn't fair. Maybe this isn't a fair comparison, but to a certain extent, Block almost reminds me of like an Arduino Lite.
Yeah, or how about Arduino Alt, meaning alternate interface for programming the Arduino? And actually, yeah, they're using the Raspberry Pis for this.
But the Arduino can do a lot more than Blocks.
That's true.
I mean, like, you know, that's why I said Lite.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll let it slide.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. But it's cool. It looks fun. It looks like it would be, just something that would really give kids a significant leg up in the world of coding. I mean, like, I wish I'd had something like this when I was a kid. Maybe I'd be a wealthy coder instead of a poor writer today.
Yeah, I think we both could have done with some tools like this when we were kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd be paying someone else to podcast for us.
Right.
Yeah, good times. Well, okay. Anyhow, so I'm looking forward to seeing Google Blocks actually come out as a real product. Hopefully it will. And I'm excited where we're going with this trend with making coding more approachable for kids, which translates to more approachable for adults as well.
Yeah, which will translate into really cool things at some point in the future for us to play with.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Brian, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. I'm so glad that you're able to join me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's great. And Atlassian, thank you for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, atlassian.com, and check out their products, Bitbucket, HipChat, Confluence, and Jira. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.